Welcome to Design Downtime, the podcast where we celebrate the joys of living a balanced creative life. I'm your host, Guy Siegel, a design director in Toronto, Canada, and I invite you to join me on this journey as we redefine what it means to be a successful design professional. Let's break free from the shackles of hustle culture and embrace the full spectrum of human experience, because life is too precious to be spent only in pursuit of productivity. Today, I have the pleasure of talking with Holly Campanez. Holly is a VP of Design and Head of Adobe Practice at Avenue Code. During her time in this role, she had the pleasure of collaborating with clients from the Fortune 100 to create functional, beautiful, and innovative products and services globally and observe design trends in action. She is passionate about the potential of design thinking to create a positive impact, both socially and economically. Holly lives in Northern California with her husband, son, daughter, and three cats. Holly, welcome.
Thank you, Guy. It's such a pleasure to be here. I've been looking forward to this for the last couple of weeks.
Okay, high expectations, as you should.
Definitely. I'm ready. I'm prepared.
Wonderful. So you're going to talk to us about cooking.
I am. Cooking has been something that I have really enjoyed since I was a little girl, but I think in the last several years, it's kind of taken a new turn for me and taken on more meaning as well.
So let's, I always like to start with the kind of the origin story of where things begin.
Deep.
Tell me, where did cooking start for you?
I have a really vivid memory of being about 6 years old in a tiny brick floor kitchen of a rental home where I lived with my parents and my two younger sisters in Southern Colorado. So 6 years old, my sisters would have been 4 and 2. We had just moved there from Tennessee, and we were just all kind of trying to figure out what it was like to live in a new place. My mom faced some health challenges during those years, and I remember I really just wanted to be helpful and take things off of her plate. And so that's where I kind of started trying to learn how to cook. And she taught me a lot. And these are very basic things. But as a six-year-old, you know, you climb up on your little stool and you open a can of tomato soup and heat it on the stove. You just feel like, I'm a fucking goddess. I've got this. And so that's my first memory of cooking. Yeah, I think that's the first time I can remember actually cooking. And from there, it just evolved. My grandmother also is a fantastic cook and baker. We grew up close by to her after we did move to Colorado. And so I remember asking her for recipes for cake, for bread, for different kinds of things, and then always trialing it out. And we were really fortunate where we lived that we had a lot of plants growing and edible plants. And so I remember collecting rosemary from the garden and chopping it up and thinking, like, what's that going to taste like and smell like if we add it to the bread dough this week? So yeah, just a lot of adventures in cooking from a really young age. And I think really just finding that so gratifying to be able to contribute as a small kid, like that's all you want, is to feel like you're part of the life that's going on around you.
Did you have any special go-to recipes that you would make?
Well, the canned tomato soup was a favorite. Deviled eggs, which ironically I'm not really a big fan of eggs, but they were a crowd pleaser, and so I started making deviled eggs for every church potluck and at least once a week at home, and I still make them for holidays for my extended family. And then later on, I think the bread as well, like any variation of bread, sandwich bread, rolls, pastries, I really enjoyed baking as well.
What age did you start baking?
Gosh, I'm trying to remember. I think it would have been around 10. I think I was cooking basic stuff earlier than that, like I said, 6, I think I remember, but baking bread became kind of a regular weekly occurrence around 10. And my little sisters would bake it with me too. So you could imagine 3 little girls with very long brown hair, all like up to their elbows and flour all over our noses and cheeks. And we would each do something a little different. I remember my youngest sister, she's gonna hate me for telling this story, but she used to be really liberal with her usage of sugar. And we'd make 3 loaves of bread, the 3 of us girls, and they'd come out of the oven and we'd cut them and put some butter on them. And my mom would always say, gosh, Anna, you just must be so sweet. Your just sweetness comes through in your cooking. And I remember thinking, it's the sugar. It's the sugar. She's just adding more sugar. But she is also really sweet. So we kind of let her get away with it.
I can't imagine a six-year-old who is so advanced only opening a can of tomato soup. But I know kids twice that age who don't really know how to boil an egg. So kudos to you. What was next? What was the evolution of that?
We went kind of through a long period of time as a teenager. I was really, really, really focused on academics, and also theater was a big deal for me. So I stopped cooking as frequently as a teen, other than just kind of meals of necessity, throwing things together, you know, putting together a quick meal for my sisters and I if my parents were out of town or that kind of thing. And I didn't really start cooking again until I was in my 20s and I was in college. I was my senior year of college. I lived with a big group of girls. There were about seven of us in the same house. And we would take turns cooking meals for each other every night. We shared the food bill, which, you know, could in some cases be a real recipe for disaster. But in our case, it was really lovely, just a great community of girls. So we started all taking turns cooking and trying different things out. None of us really had any strong dietary preferences or needs. Since then, I've become a vegetarian, which has kind of taken things in an interesting turn. But at the time, it was simple. It's like, what can I buy? What can I cook that everyone will enjoy? And trying out different recipes. So I guess in my very early 20s, I kind of started to cook again after a little hiatus in my teens. And that was just a really fun experimental phase, having this built-in audience that I knew were going to be nice to me, whatever I cooked. And so trying out different kind of things that I would look up online or hear about from a friend, or someone would talk about something they'd had in a restaurant that they really liked, and I'd try to recreate it. And they were so kind. And of course, there's some disasters that come up with that. You burn something, or you oversalted or undersalted. There's always things that go wrong. But those memories are really special for me as well. Being a young adult and having this really lovely community of women that would sit down together at least four or five times a week, enjoy a meal, and just share about our days and what we were going through. So that kind of gave me another angle into the pleasure of cooking, is actually sharing those meals and seeing the response, seeing people come together and kind of just creating this venue for connection and conversation.
That's interesting, because both sort of periods in your life when you were cooking, when you were younger and then a young adult in college, both started, or it sounds like they started, from a point of necessity. You had to start cooking, and they evolved into something else, or you found an additional meaning in them. What was the difference? I mean, looking back, what was the difference between cooking for your family as a child versus cooking within that community you found in college?
You know, the thing that actually stands out to me at first is the similarity. I think in both cases, there was a real pleasure of contributing something back to the little community, whether it was my immediate family as a kid or in my early 20s, this community of women that I lived with. I think there was just such a pleasure of providing a service, of doing something that I knew was going to bring pleasure and enjoyment to the people around me, and hopefully make their lives a little bit easier in the process too. But I think where there was a difference as a young adult is that the field of creativity was much broader. So we had, even being young college students, we had jobs, we had bigger budgets than my family had when I was 6 years old about grocery shopping. So I could put something wild on the list, like saffron, and I knew that somebody might raise their eyebrows at the expense, but it was not going to be that big of a deal. Everyone was willing to pitch in to try something new. So just seeing the spectrum broaden a little bit about what I could try, and also just being exposed in college, you experience new kind of cuisines, you experience new flavors, you want to try things out, was very different from rural Colorado, where Safeway is the regional grocery store, might not even carry some of those ingredients. So I think it just was a broader palette to play with, honestly. And of course, you know, when you're in your 20s, you got the added fun of wine and liquor being part of the menu and the pairings and all that. So that just automatically makes for a really fun time.
you're cooking in college. I'm assuming, as you said, your palate is growing, and the not only the ingredients that you have available for you, but also the types of dishes you're cooking. What are the sort of what are the new additions to the Holly recipe book at that time?
Oh, great question. I think by that point, I had really kind of become known for my pies. So I always loved baking. Even as a teenager, I didn't stop baking. And that was something really special because my dad and my grandma are fantastic pie makers. And so every year for every major holiday, we would make pies, and I would watch them like a hawk to see, oh, how did they slice those apples? Should I be slicing mine thicker or thinner? How long did they cook them? Should I use more butter or oil in this? And how cold should the water be when I pour it in? So I just would study everything that they did to try to recreate their pies because they were fantastic. And that's an ongoing family tradition to this day of pie making together. So the pies never really stopped. I think that had kind of been my signature thing going into college, is big gatherings, I would make pies. But what I really took an interest in, especially after studying abroad in Oxford for a couple of terms and then coming back and moving into this home, was Indian dishes. So curries in particular, I really love a good curry. The spicier, the better. You know, just kind of playing with the coconut milk for that creamy taste as a complement to the spice, and trying out different veggies and combinations. So I think the Indian food became my favorite kind of thing to play with during that time. But anything spicy, I'll make a really good potato soup with a lot of mushrooms and onions and garlic sauteed up in there, and then throw in a whole bunch of cayenne pepper. So that's I love to make anything spicy. Any classic dish, I'll take it all. I'll make it spicy.
What's next after college in your culinary evolution?
So there was kind of another dormant period, I would say. Let me back up, because there was something kind of special that happened in between then and now. When I found myself post-college actually living in a home, buying my own food and not sharing the food bill with anything else, something kind of interesting happened. And I think I shared this story with you personally over a dinner, so forgive me for repeating myself, but I became vegetarian accidentally. I'm the only person that I know that has had that experience. I've never really liked the taste of meat. But when you share food and you share a food bill, you don't really think about what do I like. You think about what are people going to eat. So for the first time in my adult life, I was really just food shopping and cooking just for myself for a short period of time. And I kind of found that a couple months had gone by and I thought, gosh, I'm feeling really good. I'm not spending as much money as I thought I was going to be spending on food. What's going on? And then I looked at my grocery bills and I realized I had neither bought nor cooked nor eaten any meat for about 2 months. And I was feeling amazing. I was saving money. So I just kind of went with it. And I've never really looked back. My husband has kind of got me back on the fish train. So I should say pescatarian versus vegetarian. But that was also really fun. And also just a discovery point of, hey, you know what? Most of what I really love about cooking, the flavors that I love, they actually don't depend on meat at all. It's all about the veggies and the spices and the fruits. And so that kind of was eye-opening, because then it opened this whole other possibility where I can cook dishes with meat. I know how to. I've been doing that my whole life. But I can also make a veggie variation. And that, I think, was a development that ended up being really useful later on in life when I found myself married to a Brazilian who loves meat and doesn't necessarily want to give it up. So being able to kind of do different variations of dishes was a good skill that I learned at that point after becoming veggie.
Again, we're seeing a certain pattern here where you're having these points of evolution at certain times of your life, you know, the childhood time, the college, then moving, you know, to your own place and starting your life as an independent adult. When is the next point?
Yeah. So I think what's so interesting about that last point is that it was the first time that I was not cooking primarily for anybody besides myself, right? So as a young kid, it was about the family. in my early 20s. It was about this community of women that I worked with and lived with, and then living on my own for the first time and becoming vegetarian and really just cooking for myself was such a fun experience. And then the next kind of point that I would look at would be now in my 30s, I started really experiencing some health issues. I was in a really challenging job that was not design related, by the way. I was working for a retail real estate company that will remain unnamed. I was working about 80 to 90 hours a week. I was never not on duty. I was taking calls, answering emails 24/7. I used to get to the parking lot and just sit in my car trying to work up the courage to go inside and just be shaking there, you know? So that was a low point where I was not cooking. I was not eating well. It was whatever was available, whatever mall food court vendor was open early or open late. That was kind of what I was living off of at the time. And between the stress and the poor diet and the only exercise being really mall walking on repeat, I just got to a place where my health was not great. I started having some hormonal imbalances. I started having chronic back pain. I wasn't able to sleep very well. It just was a pretty low point in general for my health. And that really had me start looking at food differently, looking at food as medicine. And so starting to research and really understanding, okay, there are flavors, there are cuisines that I've always liked or been drawn to, but why is that? Is that maybe my body telling me something about what it needs? And realizing that, hey, I can use turmeric to bring down inflammations. Maybe that's one of the reasons I like curry dishes so much, is it's easy to kind of work that in. Or, you know, how can I work in onions and leeks and bring in some more sulfurous veggies that are going to balance things out? So those were learnings that started to fascinate me, just in terms of trying to find like the keys and clues to restoring my own health. Well, I got out of that job. I found design. I fell in love with design. I work in design. It's still challenging and hard, but in other ways, right? And so what I realized is that food really can be restorative and it can be regenerative. That was awesome knowledge, but I will say I didn't do a whole lot with that until my son was born. And when your first kid is born, you just want to do everything right. You don't want to let anything cross their lips that might be less than ideal. So when he started on solids, and my poor daughter, it's a completely different story now. I'm like, here's a pizza crust, gnaw on that for a little while. But when my son started eating solids, I was just making purees and trying to introduce vegetables in a really particular order, and then fruits and then different proteins. So that all was really like, I think I started cooking more consistently than I ever had done in the past. And that kind of was a turning point just for actually the logistical side of planning the meals, doing the grocery shopping, heading to the farmer's market to get the good fresh stuff, and then coming home and putting it all together into meals for him and then for us as well. So that I think was the next phase. And I want to kind of jump ahead, because now what's happening with my cooking journey is that it's from a completely different perspective than anywhere we've been so far. So if you look back, it was always kind of necessity, how to be of service. There was a creative and fun side to it, but it was really like, how can I help my family? How can I help my community? For myself, it was also still functional. It was fun, but it was functional. How do I cook for myself in a way that supports this new vegetarian lifestyle? Now, I've had such a fun experience over the last, I would say, year and a half, where my son, he's three, he's very verbal and very expressive, and he has a huge imagination. So the way that we cook now, of course, there's the day-to-day, let's make sure everybody's eating a somewhat balanced diet and grocery shop and cook accordingly. But now what we'll do, we'll read a book and he'll see something, or we'll be somewhere and he'll see something at a restaurant. Or even he's got these little flashcards that he likes to study about different numbers and letters. He'll see a picture on a flashcard and he'll say, "Mama, can we cook that?" And sometimes it's something I've never seen or heard of before. So the challenge is like, yeah, heck yeah. Like, let's figure out how to do that. There's a little book that he's been reading recently called Rattle Trap Car, and it has a food in it that I've never heard of. It's called Chocolate Marshmallow Fudge Delight. And in the book, they're using the Chocolate Marshmallow Fudge Delight to kind of repair pieces of the car that fall off. They use it to stick on their replacements and keep the car going. So he got really interested in Chocolate Marshmallow Fudge Delight. And he said, I want to make that, Mama. Can we make that? He said, I have no idea what that is, but okay. So figuring out, how are we going to do that? What's the size? What's the consistency? What goes into there that's not going to just like send him off on a crazy sugar high necessarily? That's been so much fun. And just kind of trying to think through, or even for his birthday, I asked him, what kind of birthday cake do you want? And I figured he would just say chocolate, but he said, I want a chocolate chip birthday cake, and I want it to have 4 layers. And I want it to have at least 40 chocolate chips. And I want white chocolate chips and I want brown chocolate chips. And that was a new challenge for me. I never baked a chocolate chip cake before. And you can't really, because the chocolate chips sink to the bottom of the batter. So you have to find a way to like use different stabilizers in the batter to make it heavy enough, but still fluffy enough that the chocolate chips won't sink. So it's been so imaginative and so not from a place of necessity that I'm just like having my mind blown about how fun and creative it can be when a 3-year-old gives you a challenge of, I want to cook X, Y, and Z. What have you got for me? How do we make this happen? So that's just been awesome.
That's great. I love how food takes shape and meaning according to sort of what you need it to do for you in certain times of your life.
Oh, that's such a great observation. Yeah, because it was kind of like, I guess in the first instance, it meant contribution. It meant being an important part of something. And then it evolved to being fun and something I did for myself as self-care, and then medicine and healing, and then providing for the family. And now just this completely joyful, unnecessary creative outlet that involves a lot of chocolate chips and marshmallows.
So let's say I'm coming over for dinner. What would be your showcase dinner?
Oh, okay. How much notice do I have? Do I know you're coming? Is it like same day or like, hey, I'm popping over? Or is this like I have weeks to plan something?
I'm giving you 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, it's really hard because, to be fair, I think the thing that our family has become known for is really more something that my husband cooks and I'm the sous chef, and that's the Campanese family pizza. It is a very particular pizza that we, over time, have crafted to include all of our favorite ingredients. So if you're a pizza guy, if you're coming over on a Friday, it is hands down going to be pizza night. And that is like, that's our family thing. Arthur, my son, makes the pizza dough with Hanan on Thursday. So the night before, they do a double rise. They mix it all just right. Arthur reminds us never to forget the garlic powder. That's a really important part of the pizza crust. And then we spend Friday afternoon kind of chopping up the ingredients together and laying everything out, grating the cheese. And the ingredient combination, it sounds a little funky, but I swear it's really good. So going back to the vegetarian days, think about, I know this is controversial, I like pineapple on pizza. So if you think about a Hawaiian pizza, but then you're going to take out the Canadian bacon, how do you put something that is like meaty and salty and has that good umami flavor? It's green olives. So we do pineapple and green olives. My husband's from Brazil, so they like really creamy, dairy heavy kind of toppings. There's a cheese where he's from called requeijão. And we don't have it in the U.S. However, cream cheese is a pretty good approximation. So the crust is actually stuffed with cream cheese, and then there's additional cream cheese that gets layered over the top. The boys do put Canadian bacon on their half of the pizza. And then, of course, it's got to be spicy, right? So a lot of red chili flakes on top. Top it with olive oil, another good Brazilian thing. And then I'll do a sprinkle of Parmesan on the top, too. So that's become really special as a tradition for us. And if you like pizza, if you're coming over on a Friday, it's got to be pizza. But if, you know, if we're going to go a little fancier, I think we also do a really good pan-fried salmon paired with risotto and wine from our favorite Napa Valley winery.
Okay, now I'm really hungry.
Me too. I'm really hungry now. You got to come over. We got to make this happen.
That's a deal.
Toronto's not that far.
Do you have any dishes that are kind of like your great white whale?
Yeah. And it's embarrassing to admit this because I make this at least weekly and I still feel like I just cannot nail it. Pancakes. I don't know why. The simple pancake eludes me. I've always had issues with it. Like, it's either they're not fluffy enough or they get burned on the outside and not cooked through, or they don't adhere and they just like turn into this sticky mess. It should be so simple, but it's my Achilles heel, the pancake, the simple pancake. Yet to knock it out.
I'll share with you my recipe.
Tell me.
I'll give it to you afterwards. It's
Oh, I thought you were going to deliver it here for the whole world.
No. It's a secret recipe.
All right. That makes it more special.
How is your family when it comes to trying all those different spices and flavors? Are they do they cooperate?
Some better than others. My husband is the pickiest eater of the family. So I joke with him that he's got the palate of a 2-year-old. He hates cumin, which is one of my favorite spices for savory dishes. Hates. Also, just physically cannot tolerate any kind of green pepper, whether it be a bell pepper, hatch pepper, chilean. Like, and that's, I mean, I'm from Southern Colorado, Northern New Mexico. That's like, we don't do anything without green chilies in it. So that's been challenging as a family to kind of try to navigate the avoiding those. But again, it just all goes into this really creative challenge, or I'll do a version of something. I make a really mean mac and cheese and I'll put hatch green chilies into mine, but leave them out of his, and maybe he'll put like sausage or bacon bits or something instead to kind of snazz it up a little bit. My son is going through a typical toddler phase where if it doesn't have chocolate chips or marshmallows, he's not really all that into it. My daughter is 8 months old today, in fact, and she will eat anything and love it and like sob when it gets taken away from her. So the bigger challenge with her is just to keep her from choking on anything. But so far, everything we've thrown at her, she's been a really big fan. So I'm excited to share more of my cooking with her. And I'll just pray that that phase hangs on a little longer with her.
We started this conversation with you as a young child, 6-year-old. Now you're a mother. You have 2 kids. How do you see, you know, your love of food and cooking being passed on to them?
That's such a great question. I think as a parent, you never know what your kids are picking up that you're throwing down, good or bad. You just pray that they're going to pick up more of the good than the bad. And I think when it comes to cooking, I guess I hope, and I journal every day with this hope and this intention, that my kids will feel how very loved they are. And I hope that me cooking for them is one of the ways that that comes through. And I also hope that as they grow, that they will see it as not just a chore, something that has to be done or something just functional, but I hope that they will get to experience that same joy that I did in my early 20s of sitting down to a meal together that somebody prepared. If it sucks, laughing about that as a family, as a team, and just like the joy and the connection that it can bring and how creative it is when you do just get in the kitchen and look around and think, what am I going to do with what I've got? And I hope that it brings them fulfillment. I hope that it makes them feel proud of themselves and capable. I got to also share this story because my husband makes so much fun of me. I always tell him, you know, I don't cook as much as I'd like to, but every time I cook, I remember what a damn good cook I am. And he always answers and says, yeah. And every time you cook, you tell me what a damn good cook you are. But you know, if it's true, it's true. And I guess like I want that for my kids. I hope that they get in the kitchen and whatever comes out as an outcome, that they can look at that and be like, I'm really good at this. I'm really capable. I can do challenging things and I can have fun with it. So I guess I hope a lot for them now that I'm talking about it. But yeah, I do want all of that because I think food can be such a fun medium for self-expression and for creativity and then for creating connection with other people. And I hope that they get to experience all of that.
That is such a lovely sentiment. Holly, where can people find you?
People cannot find me on most social media channels, but I am on LinkedIn. I think it's linkedin.com/HollyVW, but I'll share the link. I'm pretty much just on LinkedIn these days by choice.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for coming in, sharing your life story with us.
Thank you so much. It was so much fun.
This is all for this episode of Design Downtime. Thank you for joining me. And until next time, I hope you enjoy your downtime.